This is episode number 90 of Radio Freethinker.
Welcome to Radio Freethinker, the radio show podcast that promotes skepticism and critical thinking, right here on CITR 101.9 FM in Vancouver, and of course also heard on CFBX 92.5 FM in Kamloops. Now, on Fridays at 3 p.m., because they wanted us to get that juicy kids right out of school looking for their skeptical fix crowd.
It's Friday's always your big drive time, right? You put your strongest shows on the Friday and that, right?
Yeah. And they called us up. They were like, hey, guys, can you help us out? And we were like, yeah, because we're good like that.
Excellent.
Yeah. This is Ethan, your free-thinking historian and executive director of CFI Vancouver.
This is Don, your political science philosopher.
This is Chloe, student here at UBC.
And this is Daniel, president of the UBC Freethinkers Club and economics student here at UBC. Yeah, I brought that back.
Yay. So, you know, everyone, I was just thinking, I think global warming, it's got to be a hoax. Got to be a hoax. Anyone here in Vancouver is going, holy crap, is it cold out? And that, I think, to me, proves that global warming is a farce. It's a total fake.
I seriously can't remember Vancouver ever being -8 before.
Excellent use of the scientific method, guys.
I know.
Yeah, I remember, but I'm just much more intelligent. You guys know what, though? It's our second Fun Drive episode.
Hooray!
Which means...
Help CITR pay for heating.
Yes. Please do. As people know, we actually do the show live outdoors, 65 feet above sea level. But anyway, the number is to call in 604-822-8648. Please call. Please donate. Remember, if you support CITR, you get that warm, fuzzy feeling of supporting CITR. But, you know, you get some pretty cool swag as well. At $30, you get a Friends of CITR card, which has amazing discounts around town.
Plus, you get to be our friend.
That's right. And who, you know, wouldn't want to be our friend? At $60, you get the Friends card plus a record bag. Awesome.
Yes.
At $101.90, you get the card, the record bag, and a limited edition surprise.
Which last week Don claimed was Ethan, just saying.
Well, I am pretty surprising.
Are you limited edition?
There's only one of me. And I'm going to die someday, so yes. At $250, you get two friend cards, two record bags, two limited edition surprises, and you get to host your own show for an hour.
Wow.
That is pretty wow. $500 for the, you know, rich supporter. You get your two cards, your bags, your surprises, your hour-long show, and a t-shirt. And the ultimate way to show your support, $1,000. You get the cards, the bag, the surprise, the show, and a hoodie.
Although I'm sure you don't have to just give $1,000. If you're feeling super generous, oh man.
Yeah, I mean, really... Honestly, folks.
And you know, it's important, right? Because, I mean, CITR, it's an independent radio station, right? I mean, there's no big corporations involved here, right? It's all locally produced. And because of that, you know, there's no pressure. I mean, a show like Radio Freethinker, right, which is a skeptic, we sometimes rub people the wrong way because we're willing to say things that are not politically correct or something that goes against the common norm. And it's on independent radio where this kind of voice gets heard. And it's important for you to support that so that you can get the skeptical message out there. So please, please call in at 604-822-8648 Or online, go to www.citr.ca/donate and click on Radio Free Thinker and donate now. But speaking of important things to do, I understand that even if you're dead, you can't stay in the ground anymore. That you know, we're pulling out everyone to try and get them to donate. Are there any Danes who might be coming back from the grave in order to perhaps donate if they had any money left?
And they were still alive? Well, perhaps. Have you guys ever heard of Tycho Brahe? And not, as some have referred to him, as Tycho Brahe?
Yes. No. Who is this?
Okay, well, he was a Danish nobleman who was also an accomplished astronomer and mathematician.
He was Danish?
Yes, he was. He had his own Danish island. Famous for two things. One, his protege, which was Johannes Kepler, which everyone knows, the three laws of motion.
Right.
And I don't know why this is important, but everyone mentions it, but when he was younger, he was in a dueling accident where he lost his nose, and he had a prosthetic nose for most of his life.
And that, kids, is why you don't duel.
There actually, I think there's a big statue of him on his island, too, and I think his nose is missing, like the Sphinx.
Yeah, you know, and it's really amazing, too, because, I mean, like he was optical telescopes, right? So he did all his observations with his eyes, and he had various devices to help him do this. But he was really, really famous because he had the most accurate, most detailed picture of the sky for his day, which is why Johannes Kepler, who was working on his ideas, went to Tycho Brahe.
Once you planted the idea, I guess.
That's why he went there.
Tycho Tycho. He was the royal mathematician to the Bohemian Emperor Rudolf II. As I mentioned, he was a celebrated astronomer. He, in his book, De Nova Stella of 1573, he got rid of, destroyed, removed the theory of the celestial spheres, showing that the celestial heavens were not immutable or perfect, as assumed by Aristotle and Ptolemy. Now, as Don mentioned, Brahe is also noteworthy. His protege was Johann Kepler, who would one day, you know, play that instrumental role in the scientific revolution. But Brahe led an interesting life, as Daniel mentioned, the whole dueling thing. No more interesting is the story of how he died.
Ooh.
So the legend goes that he was at a banquet in Prague, and you know, having some food and all that. And he had to go to the washroom, but he was too embarrassed to leave the table.
Well, wasn't it a royal banquet?
Yeah. Like,
so protocol says you don't get up.
Oh yeah, you know, the emperor was there, the whole court, right? And he was like, you know, oh, I got to stay here, right?
Of course, if this was a Mel Brooks movie, they'd have piss boys for that. But
sure. So he stays at the banquet. He doesn't go up to the bathroom. Dies 11 days later.
Is he still sitting in the banquet?
No. This was after the banquet. Oh, 11 okay, days later, he dies. So the legend is that his bladder exploded.
That's terrible.
And the reason people think this is because the days before he died, he couldn't go to the bathroom, except under extreme pain and under, you know, extreme duress. So that was sort of the, you know, big legend, was that this guy was so polite he died. Now, this is kind of maybe a little fanciful. So back in 1901, they exhumed his body and did a few tests on his mustache, which turns out actually had high levels of mercury in
how are you supposed to figure out if his bladder exploded by taking a sample of his mustache?
Because I think they're going with the assumption that that wasn't what happened.
Oh, okay.
And so they took some samples of his mustache, and it turns out there were high levels of mercury in it. Now,
he must have taken lots of vaccinations.
Yeah, funny. He was also an alchemist. And alchemists at the time tend to work with mercury, and he might actually have drank it, which was kind of silly.
Well, actually, not necessarily. I mean, we think it's silly today, right? But back then, they didn't really realize the toxic effects. And
sure.
Actually, it was one of the standard medicines you would use. Most notably, if you suffered from syphilis or something, right? It was one of the things that they would commonly use as sort of a cure-all.
Mm-hmm.
So although you're right, it's dangerous, but it's not that unusual to have high levels of mercury. Although I understand the second time that they tried to dig him up, they were looking for pools of mercury or something?
Yeah, they've been doing this for a little while now, actually. And a couple of weeks ago, they received clearance to kind of get him out of the ground again. and perhaps complete the studies. I mean, there's been other sort of fanciful suggestions that he was poisoned, that perhaps it was Kepler who got rid of his old, teacher to make room for himself. But those are all pretty wild speculation, really. So the team that's been researching this has until Thursday, which was like 2 weeks ago, to finish their tests, get them back on the ground, and come up with some conclusions. I've been watching the news, haven't heard anything yet, probably still working on it, but I think it's kind of interesting. I mean, here's a guy who died long time ago. We don't even know how he died, but because of the fact that he played such a huge role in our understanding of science and astronomy, you know, we're digging him up to uncover the mysteries of his life.
I was listening to one of my podcasts, and I've been trying to hunt down which one. I think it was on the BBC, and actually, the guy there says, you know, it's not really that interesting. If you think about it, he couldn't pee, right? And one of the things, if you have a kidney stone, that's one of the side effects. And one of the ways they did get rid of the kidney stone right up until quite recently, is they take a needle and they literally stick it up your urethra and they wiggle it around. And, of course, hygiene wasn't the best back in the olden days. So it's quite likely that he probably got a bladder infection from this procedure. And that may have been the reason why he died. That's one of the theories that are out there.
Mm.
Another interesting note that they had on there, and someone kind of complained, the interviewer was sort of saying, I don't know, why don't you just let the guy rest? I mean, he's dead. You've dug him up once already. Why are you digging him up again?
I'm sure he doesn't care.
Well, yeah, there's that whole aspect of it. But they also made a note that that Taco Bell was quite dedicated to science and scientific method. Why do I keep saying taco?
But, I think you're hungry.
Mr. Brahe. but they noted that, you know, that he was dedicated to science, and that if he were alive, he would probably be quite willing to do whatever needed to be done in order to forward the progress of science. Although I'm really kind of curious to know, I mean, this is a 500-year-old body, right? 500 plus, maybe. I mean, how much is left?
That's a good question. I don't know. I'm not really up to speed on how the body decomposes at that stage. Maybe if his coffin was, like, airtight, perhaps. But I think you're right, though. I think Brahe would not be too terribly concerned about this. I mean, he was obviously Catholic, but he did demolish a key piece of Catholic dogma when it comes to the heavens. I'm sure he did it with some trepidation, but, you know, he probably was a man of science, and, you know, I'm pretty sure he knows he's dead.
And one of those weird facts, and again, someone should go and confirm this because I only heard this the once, but apparently there were two bottles that he put into his own grave. Well, he didn't put them in his grave. And I forget what the first one is, but the other one was a chunk of his brain because he knew it might be important to study sometime in the future, so he wanted to put it in there. So I think there's actually parts of his brain preserved in the thing that they're also planning to take out this time. They didn't do it the first time around.
Maybe they could put it in a body and zap it with electrical bolt, and he would come back to life as...
That'd be great.
Yeah. But should we do another pledge drive?
Pledge drive? Well, I think that, you know, this is an important lesson because as fans of science ourselves, you know, maybe if we die mysteriously, we want to be dug up and examined. And
especially if you have a mustache. I mean, it is Movember after all.
Exactly. And if you donate to CITR, part of that money will go to ensuring that we all have, you know, very close to the surface graves. So that when, you know, one day we die, we can be dug up pretty soon.
Well, and we'll have that hermetically sealed, you know, nothing can get out, graves, stone, box, what do they call it? Coffin, that's the word.
Yeah.
But speaking of having good stuff, one of the things that you'd be paying for when you support CITR is equipment. CITR is constantly trying to upgrade its equipment. It's been old radio stations have been around for decades, and some of its equipment's beginning to wear out. Every so often you hear us complain about how the buttons don't quite work right, or every so often you hear a little glitch. And one of the things that you'll be paying for is new equipment. Did you realize that a new mic costs over $150, that the computers are $500 each? They have a digital library of music, and although we don't play a lot of music on our show, it's an important part of the station, cost over $15,000. And every dollar you send in helps the support to update, to upgrade, and to improve the station and with these equipment and upgrades. So please phone in and donate $30, $60, $101.9 $250, $500? Do we have any of our own personal swag that we're giving away besides the standard CITR stuff?
Oh, do we ever? Radio Free Thinker takes care of its own. For a donation of $20, we will provide you with a special Rowie Club shirt and member card. At $30, we have the brand new Skeptic's Guide to the Universe Vancouver t-shirt that they brought with us for their live show. $30 gets you your own SGU t-shirt. I have one. Oh, they're fantastic. $80 lets you co-host a show with us. We've already had some great response for this particular prize pack, so we're going to keep doing it. $80, you get to co-host a show with us. Come on, talk about whatever you want. $101.90 gets you a free dinner with us, Radio Free Thinker, and we'll tell you all about exhuming corpses.
You know, it's funny because we were talking about Tycho Brahe and Mercury, and Mercury's been in the news lately. Apparently, if you're an American, that you're going to be seeing something to deal with Mercury. Daniel?
Yeah, an anti-vaccination group has launched a campaign to get this really, really horrible ad in theaters before showings of Harry Potter, which is, of course, one of the most popular shows, one of the most popular movies this season.
I've seen it twice already.
And there'll be a link on our website to go see this video yourself.
To go see the video, yeah. And so also it, what's potentially even worse is that a lot of kids and younger people will be seeing this who... and it has a very straightforward scare message. It's mercury is in these vaccines, and mercury kills people. And there's a lot of worry that when you go into a movie, you're not exactly in a position to think critically about things you see. I mean, if you're going to see Harry Potter, you want to see Harry Potter. Seeing this 30-second ad beforehand is probably not going to make you question it so much, and there's worry that it could really affect, if it gets like really widespread, it could affect flu shot rates.
You know, and that was the thing. I looked at the video, you know, and one, there was this whole mercury thing. Mm-hmm. But another thing that I thought was really disingenuous, really misleading, is they had a picture. There are labels that you put on chemicals, right? There are MSDS labels, mm-hmm. that tell you the hazards for handling these chemicals. And they had one of these flash up on the screen, and it said, you know, very toxic, right? And you go, oh my, it's very, very toxic. But it's so misleading because this is like the concentrated industrial strength, you know, the kind of thing that they use in the factory kind of thing, not the ones they put in your vaccine. The vaccine's really, really, really watered down.
And actually, we should point out that they don't contain any mercury anymore.
Yeah.
I was going to go on to that one.
Yeah.
but I thought that was really, really disingenuous. Although, from what I can finish up with that. So they missed it. And it's really disingenuous. I mean, it's like sodium chloride, right? I mean, sodium chloride in a sufficient dose can be very toxic. And there are other various salts that in minute amounts are okie dokie. But as Ethan pointed out, it said, you know, a lot of the doses of the vaccine contain mercury. And in one sense, that's true. If you were in a third world country, they use the multiple shot dose, which does have mercury because it's cheaper, mm-hmm. right? But in North America, they don't use it hardly at all for any of the doses, which is really just disingenuous.
Exactly. But, you know, as we were saying, this is the Fun Drive episode of Radio Free Thinker. We're going to encourage you to donate. Remember that number to call, 604-822-8648. And if you're listening on the podcast or listening in Kamloops and it's a bit time has passed, don't worry. You know, we're still going to take your money. So call, visit us online at www.citr.ca/donate. And again, help support community radio. We'll be back after this on CITR.
Monster, mad cow, or bird flu.
You got it.
Okay. Okay. Hey, you're putting a lot of.
Without CITR filling the airways, that's what you would hear. Vancouver would lose an essential source of independent and diverse music and spoken word programming, and we know that commercial radio doesn't play what we play. Vancouver would lose multicultural programming, community and student access to media, and all the shows and events CITR sponsors. But really, we don't want to imagine this world. So support CITR during this fund drive. Call 604-822-8648. 604 UBC Unit or online at citr.ca/donate. The unique sounds of CITR Radio are possible only through your continued support. Call 604-822-8648, 604 UBC Unit, or online at citr.ca/donate.
CITR Fund Drive 2010, November 16th to 25th. Visit citr.ca to learn more.
We're back on Radio Free Thinker. So we were just talking about, you know, exhuming corpses and mercury. What else is making the rounds in the
Well, on an up note, wink, wink, nudge, nudge, the Pope seems to think male prostitutes deserve more protection than your standard Catholic. In a recent book called The Light of the World, The Pope, The Church, and Sign of the Times, he said that condoms can be justified for male prostitutes seeking to stop the spread of AIDS. Apparently, the intention is to reduce the risk of infection. Very noble. Although the Catholic Church has never apparently released an explicit policy about condoms and HIV, although they've done numerous things about condoms and birth control, but apparently Pope Benedict said that, and I quote, "A first step in a movement towards a different way, a more human way of living sexuality," which, I mean,
what does that even mean?
Yeah, well, but also, I mean, this cannot be the Catholic Pope. he uses an example, male prostitutes, for whom contraception is not an issue, as opposed to married couples where one spouse can be infected. So it's like, you know, as long as you're not killing a baby in their eyes, then it seems to be okay. And he uses as an example, sort of, you know, if you have contraception, it's like, how many children are killed who may have one day been geniuses, who could have given humanity something new, who could have given us a new Mozart or some new technology? Or, as we talked about before the show, a new Hitler, a new Stalin, a new Jeffrey Dahmer.
Or just overpopulation.
Yeah. Well, the Pope has actually clarified his position a little bit, and he's basically saying now that it's okay to use a condom, not just for male prostitutes, but also if you're protecting your partner from HIV/AIDS. So women can use them, men can use them, anybody can use them, provided you're doing it to protect somebody else's life. Which is, I mean, a pretty abrupt change of pace from the Catholic Church, who for the past how many years Benedict has been around, it's basically been waging a war on contraception. Previous comments have been as inflammatory as suggesting that condoms actually spread HIV. This is shocking that he's saying this.
Yeah. Well, you know, but there is the hook here. See, this is what you call a gateway condom, right? Because he said that this may be a basis in the cases of some individuals, as perhaps as male prostitutes who use condoms, where the first step in the direction of moralization is the assumption of responsibility. So the idea is first you use a condom, then you go to church, then you renounce your sins and become a Catholic.
And stop using condoms.
That's the way gateway drugs work. I mean, gateway condoms work, right? They start you off on the weak stuff, and then they move you up into the big stuff. Like, you know, well, I really want to go somewhere, but I won't go with pedophilia at all. No.
Daniel just facepalmed.
You know, it's funny though, actually. And in this interview, he said some other weird things, which again is. I'd like to know whether the interviewer gave him drugs, because he made a few other comments. I don't remember a lot of them, but one of the ones I thought was interesting is he did a defense of Pope Pius during World War II, and his support, apparent support for Hitler, and I think genuine support, but that's debatable. Where he said, well, you know, The Pope was given the choice of either supporting the Nazis, thereby leaving the Catholic monasteries and that free from Nazi intrusion. And in those monasteries, they actually could hide Jews from the Nazis. Whereas if they came out strongly against the Nazis, then the Gestapo would have gone through all the monasteries to root out the Jews in there. Now, I think that's a dubious claim, but
did they actually help that many Jews? I don't remember hearing
about
this.
I know that it happened, but I don't know how often.
Yeah, I mean, there are reports of people like hiding in churches, but there's reports of people like hiding all over the place.
Yeah.
I mean, I don't buy that for a second. I'm just kind of floored, though. I mean, like, what does this mean? Is the Catholic faith now okay with contraception?
Like, and okay with male prostitutes. Like, the fact that he's addressing that at all is bizarre.
Yeah, that was... that. Well, actually, no, you know, if you think about it in a really bizarre way, it kind of makes sense. I mean, the Catholic churches have to come to realize that it has an issue with pedophilia. And then part of that means it had to come up with the fact that there's a lot of homosexuality in the Catholic Church. Bad, you shouldn't do it, but it's there. And maybe this is just a natural evolution of that, like, hey, we've got a problem, let's try and deal with it. Now, I'm giving him the benefit of the doubt here, which I really shouldn't, but maybe this is a sign of a certain evolution, or...
It's the new church again, 2.0.
Again, maybe it's the kind of thing that this interviewer slipped Benedict something in his holy wine, and you're getting all this, because you're right. I mean, it is so contradictory. Although... I hate being fair all the time.
Have you seen that a lot of other high-ranking people in the church have sort of backpedaled a lot on what has been said, though? They were basically saying he was misquoted.
No,
that didn't mean anything like this.
That's actually a big thing, because I do know that like the Catholic Church in North America and Canada and even Europe are not the kind of people who say condoms cause AIDS. But when you in Africa, that is a major theme.
As well as
in
like
Africa.
South Africa, South America, Asia.
Exactly.
Catholic Church is very conservative in those countries.
And I think that's where we come up. I mean, one of the things that's often talked about with the Islam is that we think of it as one monolithic thing. And although the Catholic Church is far more coherent than most other religions, there's still a lot of different factions and sects within it. Mm-hmm. So I can, although most people seem to think that Benedict is one of the radicals in it, but maybe this is one of the slight divides where he's strict on doctrine, but maybe he's a little bit more practical than some of the other groups out there. But I would not be surprised in the near future we hear him recanting or recasting these comments in a more conservative manner.
Yeah. Well, let's take a break. Remember, folks, call into CITR, donate, help us out, so that we can continue to provide you with these amazing updates on the Catholic Church and condom use, because it's so important. Gosh darn it.
Become one of us. Pledge to Fund Drive 2010. Call 604-UBC-UNIT. Visit CITR.ca. CITR's Fun Drive 2010 is now going on. Help keep your station at the top of its game by making a donation. No amount is too big or too small. CITR is the only radio station in Vancouver committed to a diverse array of independent music of all styles. Help us keep this good thing going and donate. Visit CITR.ca or call us at 604-UBC-UNIT to give us your money.
We're back on Radio Free Thinker. Remember, we are doing, of course, our fun drive, and we have some great skeptical-themed prizes for donations. $20 gets you a Railway Club T-shirt and member card. $30 gets you the SGU's Vancouver T-shirt that you can only get here in Vancouver for a limited time. Fantastic shirt. $80 lets you co-host a show with us here on Radio Free Thinker. And $101.90 earns you a dinner with the cast.
Cool.
Wow. You know, SGU Vancouver, how did we get a hold of that?
The shirt, you mean?
Yes.
Well, I was chatting with Stephen Novella after the show. And they left the shirts with us in our care. And I thought, well, you know what? Since they're here, let's add them to our swag and get some very stylish people out there.
So in essence, these are sort of totems that they were using to try and exorcise the demons of ignorance.
If you want to stretch the analogy that far, I suppose you could do that.
They are pretty awesome shirts. I've seen one. They're pretty sweet.
But speaking of exorcism...
Yes, Chloe?
Yes. Across the pond from the Pope, there are Catholics doing other crazy things. There was a closed-door conference held recently in the U.S. to prepare priests for the new increased demand in, you guessed it, exorcisms across the United States. Apparently the purpose of the conference was not so much to revive the practice as to determine when someone actually needs an exorcism or when they need psychiatric help or some pastoral care.
So, How do they determine whether they actually need an exorcism or whether they need a psychiatrist?
This is my question.
Oh no, I got this. So this was from the Catholic News, right?
They have news?
Yeah, apparently.
This is big Catholic News.
Actually, I think it's called Catholic Bull, but that's, you'd have to know. Yeah, anyhow. Signs of demonic possession might include speaking in a language the individual does not know, a strong or violent reaction to holy water, scratching, cutting, biting of the skin, a profound display of strength, sleeplessness, lack of appetite, aversion to anything holy, such as mentioning of the name Jesus. Jesus or Mary or the act of praying.
It sounds like a lot of first-year students could probably do with an exorcism, which I'm just saying.
I think I agree.
Anyway, a lack of hunger there,
that describes
a few people.
Lack of sleep. Anyway, Bishop J., I think this is Poprocki, but it's spelled Poprocki, I think he might be Polish, of Illinois. The organizer of the conference said that exorcism is only used in, quote, those cases where the devil is involved in an extraordinary sort of way in possession of a person. It's rare, it's extraordinary, so the use of exorcism is rare and extraordinary.
So if the devil's involved in a mundane way, it's okay.
Anyway,
he just sort of dabbles in screwing around with you.
What I find so bizarre about this is it sounds like none of them actually believe an exorcism is necessary. You know, like, they're starting to sound really, really skeptical about the idea of the devil inhabiting you in the first place.
Yeah, it just seems like most of the time they think people are just lying if they say they need an exorcism.
Well, personally, I think that it's a form of job creation, right? Because this very same bishop, what was his name?
Poprocki. I'm not sure.
Said there are a small group of priests who say that they get requests from all over the continent of the U.S., Actually, each diocese should have its own resource, bracket person. It shouldn't be the burden. This burden should be placed on the priest when the responsibility. It should be the priest of that diocese's responsibility to deal with his own exorcism. So it's like there should be an exorcist in every diocese. That there should be a Ghostbuster handy whenever you need one. And there's just too few of them right now. So maybe he's just trying to get some more work for the
Some stimulus money from the government.
Exactly.
The other interesting thing about this is the article that I read, which is in the New York Times, by the way, went on to discuss that the church is experiencing a kind of revival of traditional practices, such as the Latin Mass, which really throws into sharp contrast the fact that the Pope is talking about male prostitutes.
And he's sort of the driving factor behind that increase in such things.
Maybe he's doing it in Latin. Maybe he's talking about male prostitutes. I'm just saying. Anyway. It's been part of Vatican policy since 1999 to evaluate someone who claims to be possessed by the devil in order to ascertain if the person is in need of psychiatric treatment. So I don't really know what's up, guys. What do you think?
Exorcism. Every time I hear this, right, I think it's like aerobics for demons. You know, it's exorcism. Mm-hmm.
Nice.
You know what I'm reminded of? In the movie The Exorcist. I'm actually a big fan. I like that movie. I think there was actually a scene where they said, look, exorcisms are bunk, but if you're like a really diehard Catholic, it has that psychological effect. Mm-hmm. It makes you think you're getting better.
I suspect there's a lot of placebo effect stuff that goes, like, to use the term somewhat loosely, that goes on when an exorcism occurs. If you really believe this is happening to you and it... Sorry, yes, what, Ethan?
No, I was just going to say that our fund drive total has risen once again to $15,562.77, which means donate some more so that can go up even higher because we need to upgrade our facilities here at CITR. But getting back to exorcisms.
That's okay. I was just going to point out that it looks like someone bought dinner with us.
Oh, how about that?
Marlene subscribed for $101.09.
We don't know for sure it was for our show.
It's true. We don't know for sure. But if Marlene, if you're coming to dinner with us, we can tell you about exorcism. We will not give you an exorcism, however. I completely lost track of my
train of thought. I didn't get to go to the closed-door conference and learn how, sadly.
So, speaking of a return to Latin Mass and traditionalism in the Catholic Church, isn't that, like, traditional?
What?
That's where you were.
Oh, traditional, yes. Well, that's not going to help, Don. I have no idea what you were going for there. Yeah, exorcism. It's not the basic point I'm trying to make here is it sounds like these priests are becoming skeptical of this very like established piece of church doctrine.
Well, you know, actually, and we pointed out earlier that there seems to be a slight separation between European sort of Catholicism and African / South American Catholicism, and I think that's one of the things too that skepticism has is because I suspect, and I could be wrong, but I suspect that there's a lot stronger of a skeptical movement in North America, in Europe. And these people, I mean, they're people, right? We don't believe that there's a God, so they're humans and they interact with their environment. So they hear these skeptical messages. And I think that could be eroding away their level of ignorance. And they start disbelieving or weakening their thing to reduce the cognitive dissonance in their brain. You know, how can you believe in demons when you hear in science that there can't be anything like this? So you're trying to make the circle square. And perhaps because there's a weaker skeptical movement in Africa and parts of Asia and South America, that's why these more traditional that, you know, they actually go out and burn or damage people because they think they're witches. Why it has such a stronger resonance there is because there's a lack of skepticism. Speaking of promoting skepticism in North America and that, we should point out that it's great to donate to CITR Radio. You can donate by dialing 604-822-8648 or go to www.citr.ca/donate and click on the Radio Free Thinker button.
As a matter of interest, donors can choose to receive a tax receipt for their full donation or a tax receipt for the value of their donation minus the value of their prize. However, if you go to www.citr.ca/donate, you will only receive a tax receipt. So, important thing to keep in mind if that matters to you.
Although I suspect that our swag that we give doesn't count for that. So I think you get the tax receipt and our swag for that.
Well, no, I think you either get our swag or the tax receipt. I don't know if you can...
Our Radio Free Thinker swag?
Yeah.
I know you don't get the CITR swag.
Well, sometimes...
Well,
if you sweet talk your way through it, you might be able to get both. Who knows?
Yeah. We'll meet you in the back alley after 3.
Yeah. But, you know, Don, you were telling me about travel recently. And,
have I?
And you mentioned something about body scanners.
Well, you know, anyone who's been listening to the Americans lately, and, you know, the gift that keeps on giving, right? There's a big thing now about TSA...
Listening to Americans?
It is the gift that keeps on giving.
Never
mind.
Should you shove an American in a stocking for somebody?
Well, you know.
Depends on which American you're...
I think I totally turned you off.
No. See, entertainment is another value that we give to our listeners because, well, let's face it, people like to laugh.
Let's set the scene. Picture this. You're going through an American airport. It's the day before Thanksgiving. I think that's the busiest travel day of the year.
And you're given the choice of either posing nude in front of a scanner or having someone grope your junk, according to a lot of responses. Now, there's a big issue about TSA naked scanners. Now, TSA is the Travel Security...
Transportation Security Agency.
I keep getting that wrong. So, in airports right now, and it's been made more of an important issue since you had, you know, the underwear bomber and all that, where they have two kinds of scanners in order to, you know, see if you've got anything bad. They've got one that's called a millimeter wave scanner and another one that's called backscatter X-ray scanner that's causing a lot of controversy. Actually, it's more the X-ray scanner one that's causing the controversy because everyone's worried, you know, oh, they're going to get cancer or something from this. So I thought, you know, we'd break down some of the things, you know, what are the medical risks from this? Well, apparently the dose you get is roughly equivalent to about a 3-minute flight. So really not much radiation for any one individual who's taking a flight. However, there are some exceptions. Pilots, attendants, frequent flyers, for them, they can get anywhere from 2 to 500 scans a year, which is equivalent to about a 25-hour flight. Boy, imagine how tired your legs would be after that. Some have argued that actually you don't even need to use these X-ray scanners because, again, there's the millimeter wave scanners, which apparently are just as good and have no notable health risks. You know, there's even a weird thing, too, about this. The operators of these scanners, right, a lot of them want to wear little radiation badges, you know, to wear in nuclear power plants or any place where there's radiation. But they're being discouraged. They haven't been banned yet, but they've been discouraged. And it's
effectively banned.
Yeah, and but you sit there and you ask, well, why would they do this? And, of course, it's the optics, right? If you were going up to one of these scanners and you saw the guy with a little radiation badge, you're already freaked out because you're watching the news and you're saying, oh, it's the end of life as we know it if you go through this. And the guy's got the little thing. It's just going to freak you out all the more. But I mean, you know, so the health risks seem to be a little there, at least for frequent flyers, but not much for anyone else. So I don't know if that seems to be a big issue.
Well, I mean, I'm naturally a little bit skeptical of the health risk. I mean, it seems like every time something new comes along, there's always this, like, oh, it's going to give me cancer. Well, maybe if you, like, swallowed one.
Swallowable scanner.
I mean, let's face it, peanut butter will give you cancer if you eat enough of it.
Breathing will.
Yeah. Well, and they sit there and they, you know, they say, you know, there's like a 1% or 2% increase in your risk. Well, again,
it's not even that, but.
But if you start off with your chances of getting it, right, are 1 in 2 million, well, then that becomes 2 in 2 million. Well, actually, it becomes less.
Well, keep in mind, too, that cancer, I mean, appears pretty frequently. It's like 1 in 3 people are going to develop some kind of cancer in their lifetime. Mm-hmm. I mean,
that's potentially 2 of us in this room.
Yeah.
Yeah. I remember seeing this somewhere.
way to go, Daniel.
Afterwards, I'll try and find the.
I think I saw this on a sign or something.
I've read so much news on this in the last week. It's crazy. But it was from a legitimate newspaper, like the New York Times or something. But apparently, doctors who know a lot about the effects of radiation say that. That your chance of getting cancer because of this is 1 in 30 million or something, which is about the chance of getting some sort of terrorist attack. So basically, it's not going to cause many deaths, if any, and it's always really hard to say for sure it's going to cause any because it's a tiny extra dose of radiation on top of other stuff people do anyway. But it's definitely there, and it's likely to probably cause more deaths than terrorism at current rates.
So I have a potentially stupid question. Is the fear that something will go wrong and that will cause a death, or just using it, period, will cause death?
Using it, period.
Okay.
There is another issue, which I guess is valid, but I mean, it's valid with anything that you use, is that, you know, if the machine isn't calibrated right, if it isn't maintained right, you may be getting a super dose of radiation, right?
Right.
But I mean, if your brakes aren't fixed right, you can run off the cliff, right? So I don't think that's a valid complaint in itself. But let's pretend for the moment, because I think we all kind of agree, the health risks are not really a risk at all, right? I mean, they're not great, they're not really a thing. So the next thing I thought to look at, well, what about the effectiveness of it? And this is interesting, because Homeland Security did a big study on the effectiveness of it. And do you know what they said?
That it sucks?
They said, we don't know.
Oh.
Actually, to be more to the point, they're not telling anyone because it could risk security. And the only reason why we know that this study was even done is there are a number of Republicans, in a rare case where they actually do some good, congressmen who are trying to get the test publicized, even if it's just in a generic way, you know, that we ran 100 people through the scanner and 3 of them got caught or 99 of them got caught. It does seem to work quite well on things like guns and knives, right? But these things can be picked up by metal detectors. Although it also picks up things like synthetic polymer pistols, hard plastics, which are also used for guns. So there is some extra coverage over your scanner. The problem is, though, that these scanners can't pick up things that are low density, like powders, liquids, thin plastics, right? Because they're just not thick enough to show up. They can't find things that are, quote, in body. Let your imagination figure out where that could be.
Mm-hmm.
And actually, you know, for things like explosive, dogs tend to be far more reliable with regards to that. And actually, this reminds me of something I saw just before I came onto the show. And you can Google this. I'm sure it'll show up with Adam Savage, who in May apparently was doing.
In case you don't know, he's one of the hosts of MythBusters.
Who wouldn't know that? Okay, that's a good point.
Some people might not know that.
So he was on a show giving a performance somewhere, and he was talking about, you know, how because he does all these MythBuster stuff and all that, right? He has a lot of crap that he has on him, right? And usually he's good enough to sort it all out before he gets on the plane. Well, this one time he went through, he did the whole body scan thing, right? Got onto the plane, went, patted his chest, pulled out where he had two 12-inch razor blades that he used as part of his show. And he got right through the security.
And, so, and he did, he said he did do the X-ray machine. It wasn't just sort of the normal metal detector. He went through the X-ray system. Hmm. And they didn't find it. Surprise.
Wow.
So again, so the effectiveness of it, I must admit, seems to be quite, you know, in question, right? I mean,
yeah.
Does it offer some protection? Maybe it doesn't do anything. But then you go into the next question I thought that would be interesting. Well, okay, let's say it provides some extra coverage. Is it worth the cost? Well, apparently each machine costs almost $200,000 each to install. That's just the hardware. So and they're installing hundreds of them across the country, so it comes up to roughly $85 million.
Who pays for this?
Part of the stimulus money in the United States is being paid, but it's government money largely. Mm-hmm. In Canada, when they're brought into Canada, it's Canadian government who will be paying for these. I believe, if anyone can correct me on that, please, but I'm 78.3% sure it's Canadian government. And that's not including personnel and maintenance of it, which apparently works out to be close to $340 million a year for the whole system. So then I thought, well, let's do a little math in the head, right? And okay, and I'm pulling these numbers kind of out of my butt, so bear with me. Let's pretend one terrorist got through. We didn't have these scanners, and because of it, one terrorist got through and destroyed a plane. Okay, the average plane has about 250 passengers on it. And like I say, let's say we're due for one, right? It's been about a decade since the Americans were hit with the last big one, so one every 10 years. That works out to roughly a cost of $17 million per life lost. So then you have to say, well, is it worth spending $17 million? If you ever went to court and there's a wrongful death suit, you won't be getting $17 million, right? Unless, you know, it's one of those punitive things, but...
And another way to look at it is, what else could the government do with that $17 million per person if they were to spend it on police in, like, downtown Baltimore or something like that? You probably end up saving a lot more lives. So... when it comes down to it, is this really just an overreaction to potential terrorist threats, or is it really a justified, well-thought-out use of money?
Although I must admit it, there is one improvement to it. A lot of the people who are complaining about it are, oddly enough, white folk who say, well, why don't we just put all the colored folk through it and not worry, because they're the only ones who've ever been terrorists. There's never been a white person who's been a terrorist. I don't think that's quite true, if anyone knows about Oklahoma City, but yeah. I guess he didn't take a plane flight.
Yeah, and before we move on to the next part of this, there is also lots of dubious questions about the political motivation behind this. A lot of the company that makes these imaging devices spends a lot of money on lobbying, and the president of that company actually went on a trip with Obama to India. So there's lots of questions about whether, to what extent politicians were influenced by lobbyist dollars for this.
Mm-hmm. Well, so definitely an issue of exploration.
And the last part of this, and honestly, I think it's the silliest one, but you'd be amazed, it's the one that's talked about the most, is the embarrassment factor. Because if you ever take a look at one of these photos, right, I mean, it essentially strips you of your clothes, right? It's only denser material that shows up. So you get... not a sharp image, but a good outline of the human body as you are au naturel. And that seems to be the biggest thing, is people feel somehow violated by this. Ironically enough, though, I mean, it's not like you can see anyone's face, right? It's not like if you had this picture, say, oh, that's Bob or whatever, right?
I believe they do...
I know where it's from.
I believe they do take normal photos as you walk into it. So theoretically, at least, if these photos weren't to be deleted, people could match... pictures of you too.
I mean, I've seen some reports on the news about this sort of thing, and it sort of looks more to me like a mannequin.
Yeah,
you don't see anything.
Yeah,
which is unfortunate if you're like a pervert. But,
well, you know, and the funny thing is, I mean, some people are worried. You know, are they going to store the pictures? Don't they store the pictures? There's some doubt. What about privacy concerns? Maybe these are issues to be dealt with, right? If you've agreed that it's worth the money, it's effective, and it's safe. Somehow I think, you know, whether someone stores these pictures or not is the least of the problems. But one of the things that they're doing, they say, well, okay, if you really, really are worried about, you know, having your picture taken in the nude, in quotes, well, they'll give you a pat-down instead, right? This is an alternative case because, you know, they just can't let you go through because you might be a terrorist or you might have something on there.
And this isn't the normal pat-down you got in airports a few years ago where they sort of gently touch parts of your body that are normally touched.
Pretty intimate. My dad always asks, like, his belt always has to be undone and that kind of thing.
Yeah. Well, the thing is, though, is this pat-down has to be an equivalent to the scanner, right? Because, mm-hmm. I mean, they want the same level of security. And they have, from what I remember, one of the things he says, okay, I'm going to put my hand... This is what one of the security guards said to a gentleman. Okay, I'm going to put my hand on your thigh, and I'm going to gently go up until I can't go anymore, and then I'm going to bring it down, and I'm going to do that on both sides. And the guy says, sure, do that. And then he says, according to what I've... This is maybe internet gossip. If you touch my junk, I'm going to call the cops. So the other thing is, okay, so if you don't want the scanner... then you get this pat-down. But now everyone's all upset about the pat-down because the pat-down is rather intrusive. And I'm going, well, if you don't want anyone touching your junk, to quote, then go through the scanner. And I don't know, it seems to be a rather bizarre, confusing mix.
There seems to be too many issues here for this to really be worth it. You know what I mean? Like, there's too much cultural uncomfortableness.
And I think what brings us around maybe to the end of our talk here about this is that although this is a big issue in the United States right now, it's also here in Canada. Ethan, you were telling me about your experience.
Well, yeah, well, actually, when I went to Los Angeles for the Secular Humanism Conference, they said, okay, you either have the pat-down, and what they do with that one is they get these like sticks with tissue paper, and then they spray it with some kind of chemical and rub it on you to see if you have any like bomb traces on you. And I'm like, well, that might leave a stain on my nice clothes. So I'm like, okay, I'll take the, transporter thing. And you go in this thing, and it kind of goes... And it, like, you know...
Just for those of you who can't see Ethan, because he's doing a really good mime, but that doesn't quite work on it.
Well,
so
move it closer to the
Ethan stands into this box, and then the box rotates around you going... What was the sound?
It goes vroom.
Vroom.
Yeah.
And then you step out of the box, and you're in Los Angeles.
Yeah, essentially.
Because you said it was a teleporter. No, okay.
Yeah.
So
you kind of dematerialize. Well, that was easy. And
did you feel?
No, I actually kind of liked it. I kind of to me it was kind of like, yes, cool. Cameras, technology, lasers.
you know that would be such a good thing that the TSA should do in the States. They should say, listen, this purifies your body. It takes out the toxins, and then everyone will be wanting to go through it.
Yeah, Deepak Chopra will be all over it. Let's go to a commercial break here on Radio Free Thinker. Remember, we are doing our fund drive. Please donate. Please help support independent radio and Radio Free Thinker itself. And let's go to a commercial break right now.
Can you imagine a life without CITR? Vancouver would lose an essential source of independent and eclectic music and spoken word programming. We are the home of diverse and hard-to-find music, the things commercial radio doesn't play. Multicultural programming in Vancouver would suffer a great loss. Marginalized communities and people fighting for social change would lose their voice. The community would lose out on CITR-sponsored shows and events. Sounds awful, right? The unique sounds and services of CITR Radio are possible only with your continued support. Donate to FunDrive 2010 now by calling 604-UBC-UNIT or visit citr.ca.
Nowadays, we all know that cash rules everything around us. Cream, get the money, dollar dollar bill, y'all.
Like a good friend, CITR is there for you. Whenever you need it, you can flip on 101.9 FM or stream live on the internet. You can even catch up on your favorite shows via podcast. CITR has been there for all its friends since 1982. Help us keep this beautiful streak alive. Please donate to Fund Drive 2010, November 16th to the 25th. Call 604-UBC-UNIT or visit citr.ca to lend your support.
And we're back on Radio Free Thinker. So I hear that there's been some exciting news that's going to spell the doom for humanity via black hole.
No, actually, it has nothing. I don't know where you get your news from, Ethan, but, you know, just sometimes I... No, there is a huge thing with antimatter. And anyone who's seen, what was it, Angels and Demons?
Angels and Demons.
Where they had the antimatter bomb. Well, hey, you know, maybe this is the first step along that road. So antimatter, which is sort of one of the things that we like to study, scientists like to study, not me personally, has been around for quite a while. In fact, it's quite easy to make antimatter.
It's been around for quite a while. Yes. You mean the life of the universe?
Thank you. Yes, yes. Although, yeah.
6,000 years.
We've been actually making positrons, which are anti-electrons, since 1932. I'm going, holy crap. We've been making anti-protons since 1955. They're relatively easy to make. Now, if you combine them together, anyone knows what you get when you have a proton and an electron together? You get, starts with H, rhymes with hydrogen. So if you mix a positron with an antiproton, you get antihydrogen. Now, that we've actually been able to make since 1995. However, the problem is storing them, right? Because anyone knows that matter and antimatter really, really don't get along. I mean, you think the Democrats and Republicans or the liberals and the conservatives don't get along? Nothing compared to this. They literally explode on contact. So the problem has been trying to, you know, store them together. So they have these things. It's called an electric bottle, right, which is essentially a cage that uses electrical charge to separate the particles to make sure they don't interfere with regular matter. But, of course, this doesn't work for hydrogen because you have a negative and a positive charge, and when you get them together, you get a neutral charge. So these electric cages don't work, and they've been trying to figure out how to get around it. So the second line of defense are magnetic bottles, which use magnetic fields to capture them. But unfortunately, the magnetic fields are like magnitudes weaker than electric fields, so it's a much, much more difficult task to do. However, the Alpha Project, which includes our own Triumph Lab here at UBC, have finally done it. They created a cage that has trapped 38 atoms of antihydrogen for 1/10 of a second, which apparently in scientific terms is like forever. And of course, they're continually doing this, so these numbers are probably outdated. They're probably much better. So why would they possibly want to do this? Well, one of the big mysteries of the universe is why do we have a universe of matter and not antimatter? You know, when the universe was created, all the math, all the physics says there should be like 50-50. It should be 50% matter, 50% antimatter. But in the beginning, and it all should have annihilated out day one. But there's some matter left over. So some people say, well, maybe they're not actually equal, or there is something that do this. Well, one of the things they want to do is to test this antihydrogen and see, is it the exact opposite of regular hydrogen? Like, does it behave exactly the same as you would expect it to, even though it's an antiparticle? And they couldn't do this effectively before because it just didn't hang around long enough. But now they can do things like spectral analysis and do a little bit of other physical tests to see whether it actually is the antihydrogen as it was. So do we know that now? No. Will we know it tomorrow? No. Will we know it ever? Yes. Really soon. And we can all be proud, at least those people who are part of UBC, because we were part of this whole process, amongst a few other universities as part of this Alpha Project. I thought that was really cool.
That is very cool.
Interesting.
Go science.
Nice note.
Science is so much fun. But you know what else is fun?
What?
Educational campaigns.
Yes.
Right. I find that rather extraordinary to believe.
Really. This past week, CFI Canada has launched our brand new national campaign called Extraordinary Claims. And not surprisingly, this was inspired by the words of Carl Sagan, my favorite quote of all time, "Extraordinary claims require extraordinary evidence." And this is going to be our slogan, and we're going to try to get this slogan across bus ads, across the country. We're going to try to get this on posters. We're going to try to get commercials. We're going to try to spark a national debate on all the extraordinary claims in our society and why not we don't always require extraordinary evidence for these claims. And I do encourage you, if you're interested, check out the website. It's actually pretty fancy, www.extraordinary-claims.com, and you can see our database of claims, our promotional video. This is really slick. Check this out. You can post some stories about your own encounters with such claims. We're going to have a forum. It's going to be quite interesting, and we're really hoping to track some media attention from this, and we're already getting a bit of a trickle of that already. So check it out. You know, as always, we're going to need the support of the public to get this off the ground, so consider donating to this as well. I think it's going to be pretty darn awesome.
How long is the campaign going on for, you think?
Well, it just started, like, last week.
Okay.
And it's going to... We're sort of aiming for early next year to get this on transit ads.
Cool.
But that's ambitious. I mean, this could take a while. The thing with this, right, there is no guarantee that transit will let us put these ads up. They could say no. In that case, there could be some legal circumstances to go through. But, you know, it would be pretty darn fantastic if we could start getting some of these messages out there. The ad in question has a number of extraordinary claims on it, including things like Allah, Bigfoot, homeopathy, psychics, Christ, et cetera, et cetera. So we're hoping people are going to say, you know, well, hold on a second. Are you saying that Christ is on the same level as Bigfoot? And we can say, well, yes, actually we do. and hopefully spark quite a debate.
And you might actually be interested to know, too, because of the the anti-vaxxing, you could actually put those on movie theaters. It's $8. I was amazed.
$8.
$8.61 to put it on a movie theater for one show in, like, L.A. I'm going, like, wow.
That's so pretty darn good.
I don't know what it would be for here in Canada, but it might be something interesting. Is there anything else that we can do, I don't know, in the upcoming weeks that people might be interested to partake in?
Well, are you talking about skeptical highlights?
Sure.
Yes.
Well, I thought that was one of them.
Well, it sort of is, but this is the official skeptical highlight portion of our show.
Well, hurry up, because we're running out of time.
We have all the time in the world.
No.
We have 1 minute.
Well, guess what? On Saturday, November 27th, at 11 a.m., CFI is presenting our usual Cafe Inquiry, this time featuring Jen McCrite, who is the author of the popular blog Blaghag and the creator of the phenomenon known as Boobquake. She's going to be here in Vancouver for a whirlwind of talks. And at Cafe Inquiry, she's going to be talking about bridging the gender gap in the skeptical movement. And again, that's at 11 a.m. in room 2280 SFU Harbor Center.
And the day before that, she'll be at UBC talking about her trip to the Creation Museum. So that should be a lot of fun.
And the day before that, she's going to be at SFU to talk about atheism and feminism.
Yes. So if you want the information for all these, we'll post them on our websites. You can also find them on, like, the ubcfreethinkers.wordpress.com.
Absolutely. Anything else?
No, sir.
All right, then. Well, this is Ethan, your freethinking historian and executive director of CFI Vancouver, saying, please donate to CITR and Radio Freethinker.
This is Don saying, eyes open, minds on.
This is Chloe. We want your money.
And this is Daniel. Come check out some of the events this weekend.
Bye-bye, everybody.
C'est l'histoire.